Welcome to the Sports Medicine Podcast, brought to you by the Sidney and J.L. Huffines Institute for Sports Medicine and Human Performance in the Department of Health and Kinesiology at Texas A&M University. At the Huffines Institute, we're always working to facilitate, apply, and bring you the most up-to-date coverage of the wide world that is sports medicine and human performance, all in a language you can understand and share with your friends. And now, here's our host, the director of the Huffines Institute, Dr. Tim Lightfoot.
Hello, and welcome to the weekly edition of the Huffines Institute for Sports Medicine and Human Performance podcast. Every week, we try to bring you interesting people in the world of sports medicine that have a little bit different take on things. And this week is no exception. I'm your host, Tim Lightfoot, and I am so pleased to have Chris Field with us today. And Chris is the organizer and the director of the Bryan College Station Marathon. Welcome to the podcast today, Chris.
Yeah, thanks for having me, Tim. Yeah.
And I should have said marathon and half marathon.
Yeah, marathon, half marathon, and a kids marathon this year.
Oh, you're doing it. Yeah. You're expanding to a kids marathon.
Yep.
Cool. We asked Chris to come on so he could talk about marathon and organizing marathon. There are so many people that run in road races, whether they're 10Ks, turkey trots, marathons, half marathons, whatever. I don't think most people know about the work that goes in behind the scenes, do they?
Yeah, probably not. I definitely didn't before I started doing this.
Yeah. So let's get some details out of the way for people. This year's marathon is on December the 9th,
yep.
2012.
Yep.
Have you guys, I think you've reached 1,000 entries
already?
Yeah,
we're knocking on the door of 1,000 after a week of registration.
Good for you. Are you guys capping it any?
Yeah, we'll cap it at 4,000 this year. We actually only had 1,500 last year, so about a 270% increase from last year, and like to keep that number at a manageable enough growth that we feel really confident about being able to take care of each runner.
Yeah. So, Chris, tell us a little bit about organizing a marathon or any run. I see also that you directed a couple of relays from Dallas to Houston. I guess that was the direction they went.
Yes.
How do you just wake up one day and say, you know what, I'm going to put together a marathon, you print some posters, and people show up to run?
Yeah. Interestingly, the way that the BCS marathon came about was that there was some conversation on a TexEggs discussion board about why doesn't Bryan College Station have a marathon? And it's interesting now. I went back just a few days ago to reread that discussion, and kind of over and over and over there was this pessimistic pulse of we're not big enough to have a marathon. I don't think the cities would work together. A&M's difficult to work with. I don't think, why would people run here when they could go to one of the big cities? And so I sort of ignored all of that and said, hey, I'd be interested in putting something like this together if you folks think people would be interested. And the response was medium. I mean, some people said, yeah, that'd be cool. And some people said, I don't think there's any way, you know, it could happen here. So we sat down with the cities really early, really late for a marathon. We didn't meet with the cities until June of 2011,
wow.
And we did our inaugural race in December of 2011 with 1,500 runners.
Wow, that's quick.
Yeah, so by all accounts, it was pretty rapid turnaround, but both cities were fantastic. I mean, we worked really closely with the traffic folks, you know, to talk about street closures and talk to the fire departments and the police departments about, you know, the closing the roads and who would block intersections and some of that stuff. And I think from a logistical standpoint, that's probably what we knew it would be a big deal, but that was a huge deal. Mm-hmm. I mean, the course road closures and police cost over $40,000, just those two parts of the race.
Wow.
Because it's just a massive, you know, inline transportation, inline traffic did our road closures. And I think they had crews out starting at midnight the night before the race. And they ran straight through for about 12 hours, either setting up or then starting to pick up after the race started. So it's a pretty huge undertaking.
Yeah, well, that's a tremendous cost. I'm sure that most people that are involved in marathons aren't aware of that kind of cost. What does a marathon like this cost to put on?
Yeah, it was about $200,000 was our cost for last year's race. I don't have that number right in front of me, but I mean, you know, by the time you do T-shirts, every runner gets a dry fit, a nice running shirt. You do the food at the end, you do the water, the Gatorade, the, you know, I mean, there's just all the rentals that are required, but I told people last week we did our registration kickoff at Scott & White, who's the title sponsor this year. And I told the runners, I said, you know, you don't really appreciate sponsors until you're on the other end of it. And you realize if you didn't have sponsors, a race like this would cost, you know, three times what it costs a runner. So instead of $50 for the half marathon, it'd be $150 per runner. So if we didn't have local sponsors, there's no way we'd be able to do this. So the two main things, the support of the cities and Texas A&M, and then also the local businesses that got behind us and really said, hey, we want to see this happen. Without those two things, we definitely couldn't have done it.
Yeah. Now, did you rely on your past history as a race director? Like I mentioned, you'd done some relays, but how did you get into that? Did you wake up one day and say, you know what, I'm a runner. I just feel like I need to direct some of these races.
Yeah. So the very first run was a fundraiser that we did for the nonprofit that my wife and I run. And basically, we were just trying to think of creative ways to raise money. And so I got eight people together and we mapped out a course down I-45 from Dallas to Houston. And we just took turns one after another, did about 5 miles each, ran the 240 miles in about 30 hours.
Wow.
And, raised about $4,000. So
down the interstate?
Yeah, we just on the feeder road. We just went on the feeder.
Yeah. That's right. In Texas, we have feeder roads along the interstate.
Exactly.
That's right.
Yeah.
Okay.
And then, The real first race I ever directed was the Turkey Trot here in town, which we just did our second one this past Thanksgiving. So I guess that was in 2010. We did the BCS Fitness Turkey Trot. And that was really my first hand at a centralized, single location, not a relay. There was just people start one place, run, end up back at that place. And we had about 450 runners that did that in its first year. And then last year we had about 1,200 that did that in its second year. So I had both of those experiences, but I mean, for lack of a better story, it is sort of waking up and saying, I've done a little bit of this. I wonder if I could just do this on a lot bigger scale, as far as the distance and as far as the number of runners and stuff. But we didn't anticipate the marathon would be as big as it was. I mean, we were hoping for 500 people last year, and we had 1,500. And a lot of people that don't follow marathons really closely, the Houston and Dallas and Austin, San Antonio, those kind of skew people's perception. Outside the four largest metropolitan areas in Texas, that our race was the largest in Texas last year in its first year. So 1,500 is pretty big for a marathon, half marathon, and to have 4,000 this year will put us like at the sixth largest overall in the entire state of Texas.
Wow. So what kind of draws do the Houston and Dallas marathons get so people can have some comparison with
that? Those are Houston's the very largest, and they have about 24,000 total. And then Austin, of those four, is the smallest, and they do about 17, 18,000 total. So there's sort of the big four, and then there's this massive drop where there's kind of no man land.
Right.
And then if you're in the 4,000 to 5,000 to 6,000 range, there's one in Fort Worth, Cowtown, that's about that big. And then the Woodlands just brought back a marathon. So that's kind of the sweet spot where we're finding ourselves. And what's interesting is that we have a lot of people that are running our race that are saying they love these medium sized races because it's not so massive that it's difficult to get to the start and finish.
Right.
You can't get into the expo.
Right.
And those are very expensive. I mean, we're very proud that our race is about half the cost of the big cities. And every single perk and amenity that you would get in a big city race, except the huge numbers, we have all the same things. So we're proud of that. And we like to say that just from a value standpoint, there's no way you find another race in Texas that's a better value than ours.
Yeah, it's exciting to run some of those big marathons, but when it takes you 20 minutes to get across the start line after the gun goes off, you go, wait a minute, I've been running for 20 minutes and I hadn't even really started.
And you're dodging people the first 5 miles. And I mean, I've done them. I've done New York City, which is the largest marathon in the United States. I've done Houston multiple times. I've done Dallas. I've done Austin 4 times. I mean, I've done the big ones, and they're great. I mean, there's a vibe and there's an excitement and kind of a buzz. And we realized early on we're not going to be Houston, Dallas, Austin, New York City. So what are we? What can we do well? And that was, we can be the friendliest marathon. We can treat one runner after last year's race said it was the first run they'd ever done that they felt like a part of a big family instead of just a bib number.
No.
And for us, I mean, that's perfect. That's exactly, we sort of play on that big city perk, small town feel. That's Brian College Station.
Sure.
And that's always kind of been Brian College Station's MO with Texas A&M.
Yeah. Now, if we've got people listening that say, you know what, I've been thinking about this marathon thing. It seems like no one aspires to run a 10K race anymore. It's like, if I'm going to do something, I'll run the marathon.
Yeah, or a half marathon.
Half marathon. Yeah. I guess so. There's a couple of questions here. First of all, if someone were thinking about that, what would be your tips for what race to pick? I mean, because there's a lot of marathons out there to choose from. You've already talked about some of those.
Right.
What are some things people should think about if they're going to do their first one?
Yeah, I think first, especially if it's going to be your very first one, would be proximity to you. Mm. I think adding in travel, hotel, taking your family along behind you, I think that adds a lot of stressors for a first-time racer that if you can avoid it, that's a great thing to avoid. Now,
yeah.
On the other hand, you have people that are sort of like, I want to go all out. If I'm going to do it, I want this huge, massive experience. I want to have to fly there. And, you know, so they choose to do like a Disney World or a Chicago or something. And, you know, that's cool. A lot of it depends on your budget. You know, sure. I know that it can end up costing you thousands of dollars if you're going to fly somewhere, take your family, stay in a hotel 3 or 4 nights. So for somebody who's cost conscious and they're wanting to just kind of the experience of doing the first one, right. and traveling is going to stress them out, I would say as close to home as you can get. Beyond that, I mean, if you go like on the marathonguide.com is a website that ranks marathons.
Mm-hmm.
And basically, you know, people that have run a race go on to that website, just like any, you know, referral or ranking website. And they say, I've run this race. Here was my thoughts about it. They did these things well. They did these things not well. And one of the things that, again, we're really proud of is that on that ranking website, the BCS Marathon is the highest ranked marathon in Texas based on fan feedback. And that's not to say we are the best marathon in Texas, because I've done some of the other ones and they do some things better than us. But that's to say that we did a lot of the little things well that runners really appreciate, and that, you know, that sort of personal feel. We weren't just running them through the gauntlet, hurry, 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 next person, go, go, go. But there was sort of this, you know, personal vibe. And I stood at the finish line last year and greeted every single runner that came across the finish as they finished the race. And, you know, you're not going to find that at a big race. So that's something that we're pretty proud of.
Yeah, when you get that final shoot, you don't feel like a cow.
Yeah, exactly.
Going through livestock pen.
Yeah, exactly. My grandmother's actually stood at the finish last year and passed out people's finishers medals. Because I said there's no one who ever makes you feel more special in your life than your grandmother, whether you're the first finisher or you're the last finisher. And so there are some little things like that that just logistically you can't do at a big huge race with 25,000 people. So I think people need to be honest about what they're looking for in a race. Do they want huge crowds? Do they want the buzz of a bunch of other people? Or do they kind of want that middle ground where they're going to get, you know, because too small can be tough too.
Right.
I mean, there's some marathons in Texas that have 200 people.
Yeah.
Which means if you're spread out from your first finisher at 3 hours and your last at 6 hours, you may not see a person for 4 or 5 miles. And that would be no fun for me as a runner.
No, that's tough as a runner because you have nobody to talk to.
Yeah, and there's no crowds. Right. I mean, so I think there is a happy medium there.
Yeah. And speak about that for just a second, because that is a big deal for runners to have contact with other runners during something like a marathon.
Yeah, I think one thing that a lot of people have found success is running with friends.
Mm-hmm.
So you'll see groups of women or groups of guys that will register together and then kind of go through the training cycle together. And I think as a runner, psychologically, that is probably one of the best things that you can do is find someone who's going to train with you and that you can count on. Even if you're just doing one run per week together, mm-hmm. like your long run, mm-hmm. but just knowing that person's waiting for me at 5:30 in the morning at the park, they expect me to be there.
Right.
And then it makes the time pass a lot faster. My buddy Ken Fogel and I trained all through last fall. And I mean, our 3 hour runs just got to where they would just fly by because it's this great time of conversation and kind of being able to share goals and how's your training going? How are you feeling? But just pushing through some of those things when you're with somebody else makes it a lot easier. So I would encourage people, if it's not a spouse, find a neighbor or a coworker or a friend that would be interested in doing it with you, because that's going to make it a lot easier.
Yeah, it's tough enough to do it, tough enough to run the marathon,
yeah,
but then to do it by yourself, training by yourself, that's just incredibly.
Yeah.
And it's amazing what you said about being there at 5:30. I had a training partner. I knew if I didn't roll out of bed at 5, he was going to be ticked because I wasn't there.
Yeah, that's exactly right. I heard a friend joked one time with his training partner, and he said, if you're ever not going to make it the next morning, don't tell me. Just don't come, because if I know you're not coming, there's no way I'm going to make it up to do it. So, you know, I think there is something about training with people. And we have a really active Facebook page, which has been this really cool kind of running all things running community that's formed from really, really good athletes that are running the Boston Marathon to first timers, you know, they're just hoping to finish, you know, alive. There's been this cool camaraderie.
And that is a joke, by
the
way. Most people do finish alive.
Yes, everybody does. Scott and Wyatt Medical takes care of all the runners. But there's been this cool community that's formed where people are going on group runs together and people are asking about how much water should I drink? And do you take a gel? And do you, you know, just this, it can be overwhelming. I mean, it's scary. And if you're just Googling, looking for answers from who knows what kind of articles, then that can be overwhelming as well. So to kind of have a group of people that is your community and that you can ask those questions to makes it a lot less overwhelming.
Yeah, and by the way, I will say we'll put all these websites up on the show notes. So if you're listening to this and you want to get any of these, just go right up to the website and grab the show notes, and all these links will be there.
Yeah, that's perfect.
You. Yeah. So talk to me a little bit about why marathoning is so popular. It's an extreme sport. We have such a problem in America getting people active, but yet the marathon is prospering really well across the country.
Yeah, every year for the last 3 or 4 years, it's almost doubled in growth. I mean, it's a phenomenon. I think we will kind of reach that cap at some point. We will hit the peak and then start to go down. But I think there's something to be said within all of us that we all have this, even if we've been lazy for a long time out of high school or college, there's sort of this innate desire to be disciplined and to do something significant. And, you know, you've heard the term bucket list tossed around a lot the last few years. And there was a movie that kind of played on that. And I think, again, I mean, I really think I've been a runner since college. I ran my first marathon, so I've been sort of ahead of that trend. But I think there is that sense. I mean, I've trained a dozen people that have said, I have no desire to really run, but I want to run a marathon. I want to be able to say I've done this.
Right.
So I can run 2 miles right now. I can run 3 miles right now. Can you help me run a marathon? And then over 6 months, they get to where, you know, they slowly can run a marathon, and it's not fast.
Right.
They're not winning any awards, not even their age group awards, but they finish.
Right.
And even if they don't do it again, they say, I did that. I proved to myself that I could do it. That was a really significant moment for me.
I've got that finisher's medal.
Exactly. And a lot of people lose a lot of weight during training, and it sort of your body craves more healthy foods a lot of times when you're training like that. And so they're sort of naturally eating better and, you know, making good choices every single day. And we added the kids marathon this year because we had a lot of families that were saying, my kids want to go run now. They see me running and they want to go run. And we love that.
You're right.
My own daughter, I have a 2-year-old daughter, and I push her in the jogging stroller, and we've logged probably 1,000 miles in that jogging stroller. But her favorite thing now is at the very end of the run, she gets out of the jogging stroller and we do the 1/2-mile loop around our block together.
Cool.
But that is, you know, as a parent, the medals are great. The bragging rights of being able to say you've done a bunch of marathons. I mean, that's cool, sort of bar talk with friends. But when your kids think it's normal to run and they say, you know, I want to go run, I want to run like you, then that is really to be able to create that sort of norm in your family and in your household. I mean, that's what it's really all about.
Yeah. You mentioned a while ago food cravings. You will have food cravings when you're training,
you do.
Won't you?
Yeah. I mean, I think a lot of people are really happy to see how much more they can eat during marathon training and still be able to either maintain or lose weight.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's an interesting beast on your Saturday long runs when you're doing, you know, you get near the end and you're doing 15 to 20 miles on a Saturday and you can consume Michael Phelps levels of food and feel like you're still hungry, which really not a bad feeling.
Well, it's the only time in my life when I've actually, you can taste and smell the food. I mean, and you're in the middle of this run and you're going, man, all of a sudden, it's pancakes with butter.
Exactly.
Point me to the nearest diner.
Exactly.
Got to have that.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah. Interesting stuff. Well, before we get away from talking about the organization of the marathon, though, you depend a lot on volunteers to help, don't you?
Yeah, it's huge. I mean, I think last year between the water stops, the kind of the aid stations, and then just different course marshals, we had probably 400 or 500 volunteers as part of the race. So one for every 3 runners.
Right. So it's important if people that are listening don't feel like that they can run the race, but they want to help.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, I mean, even there's 2 ways that we really try to make a push last year. One, if you formally volunteer, you know, we had all that information on our website and we plugged people in wherever they wanted to be. But the other thing is, because this is a new race, there's not that sort of traditional following of the big race. Like in Houston, it's sort of become tradition through the neighborhoods that the race runs. Like if you go through Westview, everyone's just sitting in their front yards drinking mimosa and lawn chairs and cheering on the runners. But we haven't had that, you know, because it's not been going on very long here. So
I just want to know where the mimosa station is
going
to be
that's Bryan College Station. Yeah, no, I heard that there was some interesting folks out there last year trying to hand random stuff out to runners, which always is a trip when you're running. But But even if people just go out into their front yards, if the course goes past their house, or if they drive somewhere that the course is going to go past, and that's a huge part of success for the city that we can't really control.
Right.
I mean, that we can control all the little details, except are we going to have spectator support? Mm-hmm. And so we asked anybody, I mean, for this marathon, I think to really become a big deal on the map is mm-hmm. going to take, you know, several tens of thousands of BCS residents going out on race morning and cheering on the runners, which is a huge way to help it. Pretty easy to do.
Yeah. We talked a minute ago about the attention now the marathon's getting amongst the general population.
Yeah.
Many people want to do it. I think what many people don't realize is that there are some huge things happening in the marathon at the elite level this
right.
year, at the world level.
Right.
I mean, the Kenyans and the Ethiopians seem to be battling.
Yeah.
The Kenyans have been really dominant, but now the Ethiopians have come back this
right.
year. We had the U.S. Olympic qualifying marathon down in Houston.
Yeah, yeah, which was just a month after ours. And we actually had a couple people in our race that were trying to qualify for the trials.
Wow.
The female winner in our race missed it by 90 seconds.
Wow.
Yeah, she missed the B standard just by a minute and a half.
Yeah, it was because that was a really tight finish on the
yes.
women. And I think what people don't appreciate is that, I mean, they see these people on TV and they're all running together, so it doesn't look like they're really running that
sure.
fast.
Sure, yeah.
But when you start to talk to people about it, you realize that the men's U.S. qualifier averaged 4 minutes and 55 seconds
yeah.
per mile
yeah.
for 26 miles.
Right.
It's amazing.
Yeah.
And there's amazing stuff happening throughout the world this year.
Absolutely. Yeah, I mean, you know, we had our male winner last year ran a 2-hour, 29-minute full marathon, which put him right at the median time for our average half marathon runner.
Wow.
So he was running literally twice as fast as our average half marathon runner. And that's just at a medium-sized race in Bryan College Station, Texas. And he would have gotten beat by a Kenyan by 15, 20 minutes.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, their runners are probably one of the elite runners are probably one of the most overlooked athletes that really do an incredible thing that no one really pays attention to.
Right.
And you do,
right.
you see him on TV, Ryan Hall, who is kind of the American hope for long distance running, and ran a 2:05, 2:04 at Boston a year ago.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, just an incredible runner. Still, you know, struggles to finish top five in the world when it comes to like the Olympic distance. So London this year will be really interesting to see. But yeah, I mean, I think for the average person, it's really inspiring to be able to watch these elite runners and to consider that they're moving for 2+ hours at a pace that most of us couldn't maintain for 100 yards.
Yeah.
And that's those of us who consider ourselves to be in pretty good shape.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, I feel like I'm fairly fast for an almost 30-year-old, and I can't run 1 mile at what those guys run 26 consecutive miles. So it's pretty humbling.
Yeah. Ryan Hall, you bring up Ryan Hall, his shoe company put up an interesting display in the New York subway where it was – you could try to run his pace
right.
for 60 feet.
Yeah.
And I for anybody that's listening, if you want to try to run that pace, just to qualify to be the top qualifier at U.S. Olympic speeds, if you were a male, you need to run 60 feet in 3.36 seconds.
Yeah.
So go out, mark out 60 feet, and try to run it in 3.36 seconds.
Yeah.
And then imagine doing that for 26 miles.
Yeah, exactly.
A female wasn't far behind that. She was at, if you ran 60 feet in 3.79 seconds, that's where you would do it.
Yeah, that's
amazing.
Incredible.
Yeah, amazing pace.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, one of our friends here, Dave Epstein from Sports Illustrated, he recently wrote a piece on the guy who won the 2008 Beijing Olympics.
Yeah.
Sammy Wanjiru. And he noted, amazing stat, only 16 American men in history have run faster than 2 hours and 10 minutes in the marathon. But 38 Kenyan men did it this past October alone.
Wow.
Amazing the dominance.
That's a huge debate right now in the running world is why the East African dominance, you know, that's a big discussion with an abundance of theories of why they're so much better at long distance running than Americans.
Yeah. And I'd encourage anybody, if you want to read on to that, Dave Epstein has done a lot of good writing on that. But watch the Olympics in particular. That's the next major race
this
coming
summer.
Up. Yeah.
Yeah, this summer will be the Olympics in London, and Ryan Hall will be there. And you know, he's hoping for a medal in that race. So he's got some fierce competition.
Yeah. But that'll whet your appetite. Everybody's appetite to go out and run the marathon this December, right?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, sometimes people can be overwhelmed when seeing those really fast guys. I think equally sort of impressive in its own way is that if people kind of Google around and find just inspirational stories of people that have run marathons, you kind of find everyday folks more like you and me that are, you know, overcoming adversity to be able to run races. They're running with a prosthetic, or they've overcome cancer a few times, or, you know, that there's these other stories that aren't quite as overwhelming to think about somebody running sub 5 minute pace, which just seems unachievable, but just kind of random every day. And that's actually the campaign that we're doing this year. People in Bryan College Station will see billboards around town sort of showing all different kinds of people with the slogan, "I am a runner." Mm-hmm. So you have a grandmother, you have a mom, you have just the 20-year-old college guy. So it's, we really want to play up the fact that a runner doesn't look or feel like one certain type of person, that every race, every age, every body type, people are choosing to make that decision every day to tie up their shoes and go out to run. And that's really what makes somebody a runner more than their time.
Yeah. Great outreach.
Yeah, absolutely.
On that project. Yeah. That's, and so we would encourage anybody that's listening that's even had a thought about doing it, check it out.
Yeah.
You know, it, again, the first one is about finishing.
Absolutely.
It's not about running five-minute splits.
Definitely not. And if you can run 2 or 3 miles right now, you have 7 months until the half marathon, you could easily be in shape to finish a half marathon by December.
Yeah. Now, one of the, we're going to, last few minutes here, we're going to turn towards really why you're doing this.
Yeah.
I mean, this is a marathon that supports a charity, and a charity called the Mercy Project. So, and which you're the founder and executive director mm-hmm. of. Chris, tell us a little bit about this.
Yeah, so my wife and I, in August of 2009, so a little less than 3 years ago, I took a trip to Ghana, West Africa, to kind of scout out a possible family mission trip for the church I was pastoring. And while I was in Ghana, I met these kids who were working as modern-day slaves. These kids that had been sold by their families for $20-$30 U.S. dollars, and we're working 14 hours a day, 7 days a week in the fishing industry, just doing labor, hard fishing labor with nets and with paddling boats and scooping leaky water out of boats with plastic buckets. And I was just really moved by what I saw. And I got home, and my wife was 6 months pregnant with our first child, and we sat and looked through those pictures of those kids that I had met, and sort of the reality of the heaviness of that reality sort of weighed on us. And I told my wife, I just said, we're young, we've got all these dreams for kind of ways we want to do things in life, but I don't know that we can see something like this and know that we're bringing a child into the world and not do something about it. I mean, don't we want our kids to know that mm-hmm. we're the kind of people that see a problem and we do what we can to fix it? And so we started Mercy Project, named after our daughter, Micah. Her life verse that we've prayed over her since she was in the womb is Micah 6:8, which says to act justly, love mercy, and walk humbly with God. And so we sort of wanted to show our kids. Now we have a second child, a son, who's 9 months old. But it's really important for us that our kids see that we take seriously this idea that we don't just say, oh, that's too bad when bad things are happening, but that we do what we can to make a difference. So this fall, we will rescue our first group of these trafficked slave kids. And basically, we're doing that through way of economic development projects. What we've learned in Ghana, I've been now 15 times since that trip in August of 2009, about every 2 months for 2.5 years. And what we've learned is this is really an economic problem. I mean, many of the fishermen that own the children were actually slave kids themselves, and all they know how to do is fish. And fish, so the fish that they're catching are getting smaller and smaller because the lake is overfished, and so they need smaller and smaller hands to do the labor. And we go into these communities, and we have these great talks under this beautiful mango trees, which is kind of the community meeting place. Mm-hmm. And they're just so receptive to – they're not harsh to us. People always ask, are you scared? I mean, they're so receptive to another way of living. They just don't have the creativity or the innovativeness to come up with that new way. Mm-hmm. And so when we say we've got these ideas of aquaculture, we want to teach you how to grow your own fish in cages instead of using the children, they're always, tell us more. How do we do it? We want to do it. You know, so it's almost as if the kids are used because they've got to be used. That's the functional way that they know how to fish. Right. And so the fishermen have been extremely responsive. I mean, some, you know, they've made me a sub chief in some of these villages, and they have these big dancing celebrations, you know, where they welcome us as friends. And it's been great. And so this fall, just 2 years ago, I started doing this full time. And so right about the 2 year mark of our start of our work in Ghana, we'll rescue our first group of kids. Wow. And they'll go to a rehabilitation shelter where they'll get psychological counseling, they'll begin formal education, and they'll get medical attention. A lot of the kids obviously have significant health issues. And then we'll slowly work them to be reintegrated back into their families with monitoring to make sure that the kids aren't sold again. So a lot of that will be, we'll make sure the kids are going to school or that the moms have microloans to be sure that they can afford to have the children back. But we really, we believe in the family unit, and we believe every kid that has a mom and dad needs to be with that mom and dad. And the scope of the kids, there's about 7,000 to 10,000 kids in Ghana that are trafficked or, or work as modern day slaves. And so if you're really going to make a dent in the problem, you can't put them all in a shelter for the next 15 years of their lives. I mean, you're going to have to reintegrate them and get them back into the sort of the normal rhythm of their lives. And so that's what we're doing. So this fall, we'll rescue the first group. And next January, they should be reintegrated back into their families. And that'll be a special day for us. This, the marathon is certainly a labor of love for us. I love running. I've run 11 marathons. My dad is a runner, really fast runner, still to this day is a faster marathoner than me. He's got like a 3:17 PR, so I've got a ways to go to catch him. But as much as I love running, it's a huge amount of work and sacrifice to be away from my family, and takes a lot of my time that I wouldn't be able to do if it wasn't raising money for such an important cause to us. And we also choose two local nonprofits this year to partner with because we wanted some of the money to stay, a lot of the money to stay local. So we're giving $25,000 each to SOS, which does a kind of a work with gang, former gang members here in town, and then also the Down Syndrome Association in Brazos Valley, giving each of them $25,000 of this year's proceeds so that we're benefiting local charities as well as the work in Ghana.
Well, congratulations, Chris. That's really honorable approach to it, and I'm pleased that we had you on the podcast today.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, we're happy to do it. Thanks for the time.
Yeah, well, there's so much about people in our business that other people don't know.
Sure.
And that's one of the things we want to know is let people know.
Yeah, absolutely.
That, again, you just didn't roll out of bed one day and say, let's have a marathon.
Yep.
To some extent, there's been planning behind this, and there's a reason to do it. And
we'd
encourage people to get involved because it is a good cause.
Yeah, well, thank you.
Yeah. We always give our guests an opportunity to give us a take-home message for today.
Well, I'll do this. I spoke yesterday at an elementary school here in town, and about 600 kids. And the message for those kids was the message I told them that I have my two-year-old daughter every night when it's my job to put her to sleep. My wife puts the nine-month-old to sleep. And every night, the last words after we sing and we pray and then we get ready to go to sleep, and I have her say to me every night, I'm going to change the world. Those are the last words that I have her say as I walk out of her room. And so I was speaking to those elementary school students last night, and I said to them, you know, I had them repeat after me, I'm going to change the world, and really told them that I hope they would live into that reality. So our listeners are not elementary school students, but I think that reality is there for all of us. And my encouragement and admonition is that we'd all be people who believe that we can change the world.
Yeah.
And that may look very, very different than what it looks like for my family right now and working in Ghana or putting on marathons. But even whoever listens to this, within half an hour of their listening to it, there will be some opportunity they have to be kind or to love someone in a way that they wouldn't maybe normally do. And just that small little thing gives them the opportunity to be a person who changes the world. So that's it. Be a person who changes the world, and don't settle for just making sure that you're taken care of, but let's all be people who try to make the world around us a better place than when we found it.
That is a great take-home message. Well, yeah, take a few steps and start to change the world.
Yeah, right? Absolutely.
Yeah. And as always, we'd like to thank all of you for being with us today and taking the time to download and listen. Chris, thank you for taking the time
with us
as well. We have our free podcast T-shirt question, and it's really easy this week. How many miles makes up the marathon? Be the first one to send us the answer to that question in an email to the email address on the website. And many of you know that by heart by now. And if you're the first one to get us that answer, you will get one of our nifty new podcast T-shirts.
Nice.
And, starting to see them around town.
They're
pretty
that's
cool
great.
Looking. Yeah. Again, thank you for joining us this week. Send us the email, give us the answer, and we look forward to seeing you next week when we have another interesting person in the world of sports medicine. Until then, we hope that you have a healthy and active week.
The Sports Medicine Podcast is produced by Cheryl Marek and Samantha Springer and licensed by the Huffines Institute at Texas A&M under a Creative Commons 3.0 license. You can share it as much as you want, and you can talk or blog about it all you want. Just don't change it or charge money for it. This podcast is made possible by support from the Omar Smith family and the Sydney and J.L. Huffines family. Our music was composed, performed, and graciously provided by Dave Zeltner Productions, your source for quality music and music production since 1992. Find them at www.davidzeltner.com. Our opening and closing credits were provided by John Miles Productions at johnmilesproductions.com. If you have questions or comments, please send them to huffinespodcast@hlkn.tamu.edu. From all of us at the Huffines Institute, we hope you have an active and healthy week.